Welcome to Luma and Bloom, the podcast that empowers and enlightens. My name is Nick.
And my name's Kate. And together, our goal is to shine a light on the dark conversations.
Luma and Bloom is brought to you by the Joy Smith Foundation. All right. So we are officially on air. And we are here today with two pretty important and special people. Do you guys want to just take an opportunity to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure.
So we're both from the University of British Columbia, and we're part of this initiative called Stop the Traffic. My name is Avery.
And I'm Sean. And I'm a fourth year university undergrad, majoring in computer science. Avery, you're in third year, correct?
Yeah, I'm in my third year. I'm currently studying psychology.
Yeah, so we're part of this initiative called Stop the Traffic. It's the first time that anything like this has ever happened in UBC, at least. And you know, it's to like raise awareness for the global issue of human trafficking. UBC is such an international university with such a international student body. So this issue definitely hits home to like a lot of us, and it's a lot. It's definitely an issue that, you know, prevails in like most countries, if not all, and on Earth. And it's definitely way more common than anyone think. I grew up in Malaysia, which is a really tropical country in Southeast Asia. And I went to an international school, and in Malaysia and just international schools in Southeast Asia, we have an event called the 24-hour race, which was a fundraising running activity. And it's like really big. It's really big in the student culture in Southeast Asia for like international school students to like sign up and participate in this 24-hour long run. So what essentially happens is you have five people or six in a team, and you basically raise $2,000 per team, and there's going to be like there would be at least 100 teams represented from like many different international schools in the region. And it's basically like a you're basically passing the baton, and you're running for 24 hours straight. So you have to like take shifts and, you know, make a plan, like I'm gonna run at 2 a.m to 4 a.m you're gonna run from 4 to 6, and I'm gonna get some sleep. And then basically there is a member in your team that is always running for 24 hours straight. And coming to Canada, I thought this issue would, you know, I thought it would be a great idea to bring this cause and this idea for this philanthropy event across the Pacific Ocean, and expand and share the experience with everyone else. And embedded to the student culture here in UBC.
Wow. I just really want to commend you, because it's really honorable that you are bringing a part of your culture here to Canada, especially something that is so impactful. And obviously, like, it was something that really had an effect on you. And the fact that you're bringing it here with you and you're sharing that with us is really quite touching. And yeah, I'm really pleased to see like a student body really gather around this issue, especially the fact that, like I said, you didn't grow up here. Your experience is very different from a different culture, and yet, you know, you're looking for ways to connect with the culture here, and it's just really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. How old were both of you when you first learned about human trafficking, and what was that experience when you found out? Like, how was it when you found out?
I don't know the exact age, but I would guess that I was pretty young. I think, like, even stuff like growing up hearing about, like, stranger danger and, like, stay away from strangers or, like, getting kidnapped and everything was kind of, like, always something, that, like, a fear that was kind of implanted in my mind. But I think that, like, when I got a little bit older and, like, kind of understood human trafficking more, I still didn't, like, really understand, like, exactly what it could look like. Like, when I pictured human trafficking, it'd always just be, like, someone kidnapped in a room or something like that. So I think that, I mean, it wasn't until, like, really recently when I got involved with this project that I really started to learn, like, all the different ways that it could look like and everything. But I feel like in the past, it was just kind of, like, this, like, scary, like, fear that I didn't really, like, understand, like, the whole extent of.
Mm-hmm. Coming from Malaysia and Southeast Asia, it is a region where human trafficking is very common. Although people do not necessarily like to talk about it, because it's so common, I feel like growing up, it's not an issue that, you know, that just sits in the back of people's minds. Like, it's a part of learning when you go to school, educating kids on, like, what to, like, you know, like, the different methods and strategies that human traffickers use, and getting us to be, like, aware of our surroundings and all of that. So I would say I was probably around, like, 4 years old when I first encountered the word human trafficking. I was in the kindergarten, and it wasn't, like, a whole, like, presentation or anything like that, or, like, a talk. It was more like the teacher at that time reading something off the news and basically giving us, like, a small, like, debrief on, like, you know, never get into a car with strangers, like, no one offers you free candy and stuff like that, and just basically telling us to be careful, because you never know, like, it happens everywhere, and, like, you don't know who to trust and who not to trust and, you know, today's society. Growing up in a different part of the world, I feel like the terminology they're used, like, in different, like, frequencies, I would say.
So what I'm just curious, what do you both feel like, as you've learned what it looks like here in Canada, like, what is the thing, one of the things that has stood out to you the most, or you were maybe most shocked by?
Definitely how people mainly think that human trafficking happens in majority third world countries. It definitely happens in our backyard here in Canada. And it's more common than most people think. I believe the province in Canada with the biggest number of human trafficking is Nova Scotia. And I feel like most Canadians or locals would not know that. And it's mostly tied to third world countries, such as countries in Southeast Asia and Africa and South America. But it definitely happens everywhere. It happens in Canada and even the most developed countries on Earth. And I feel like this is not a fact that most people are consciously aware of.
What about you, Avery? What did you find the most shocking?
Yeah, I think that, like, kind of like what I was talking about before, like, the idea that I had of what human trafficking looked like was, like, so, I don't know, like, it was, like, fictional, or, like, it seems like it, like, would never happen to, like, me or something like that. But I think that, like, the more that I learned about human trafficking, like, I mean, like, maybe in a couple years I fall into a really hard time and, like, someone could take advantage of that and I could get looped into the system too. Like, it could happen to, like, so many people, and it can happen in, like Sean was saying, like, anywhere in the world. So I think that just, like, understanding, like, warning signs and everything was just, like, really eye-opening, because I was like, oh, like, I'm not, like, immune to, like, getting caught up in a cycle.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very common misconception that a lot of people have is, you know, it would never happen to me. Maybe I'm from a good family, or, you know, I'm very self-aware, so I would never let something like that happen. Or, you know, I think it's one of those things that creep up on you so quickly, and it happens before you even realize what's going on. And so I think that's why it's so important to have these conversations, especially, you know, at your age around university years, because we know a lot of people who get trafficked very young, but we do know of lots of cases that happen into your young adult years. And so, you know, even though you may be a little bit older, it happens to everyone, like you said. And so I think it's so great that you guys are having these conversations and bringing awareness to it on your university campus. And I think that's why we really wanted to just spotlight what you guys were doing right now, because it's such an important message.
Yeah, I definitely think that, like, university students are, like, I mean, a lot of university students are, like, pretty broke, you know. It's their first time, like, living by themselves. I think that both, like, not having, like, you're studying, so you don't have the ability to work full time. And I think that, like, sometimes, like, desperation is a really big, like, puts people in a lot of danger and everything. And I don't think that people realize, like, the stuff that they could get into if they, like, open themselves up to, like, dangerous things.
So have you noticed, or is it something that has come across your path, like this concept of sugar dating that is happening now in universities and potentially even younger, where, you know, students, it is one of those times in your life where money isn't exactly flowing, the cash flow isn't exactly there. So, you know, we're hearing about it, but I'm just curious if you guys have, what you've heard about this.
Yeah, I definitely think that sugar dating is, like, a topic of conversation. Like, I'd say, like, most people that I know have, like, cracked a joke of, like, oh, like, school is so hard, I don't want to do this, I don't want to work, like, let me just go get a sugar daddy or something. And I mean, I think, like, everyone that I know has also gotten, like, those, like, funny, like, Instagram DMs being like, oh, like, let me spoil you, I'll give you, like, $500 a week and stuff. Just, like, I mean, they're, like, goofy and they're funny to, like, read and everything, because people don't take them too seriously. But I think if it, like, got sent to somebody who was, like, didn't know better, or, like, didn't, like, or, like, really needed the money, I think that that could, like, lead to serious harm and stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a gateway to something behind the scenes that's, you know, unpredictable, especially to human trafficking.
Yeah, I think it's, like, sugar dating is, like, the type of thing where it's, like, if it's, like, sounds too good to be true, it's probably not true and everything. Like, I think that getting paid to go on dates with somebody, it sounds awesome, and it sounds like, oh, like, that's the easiest money ever or stuff. But usually there's a lot of strings attached and a lot of danger that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, Sean, it definitely is a gateway, right? And it is a conversation that we've started having more and more, especially with kids younger, because everyone's online. And like you said, Avery, like, who hasn't received a message online, like a DM? I mean, I know I've received tons. And it's true, if it gets into the wrong hands of someone who's maybe vulnerable, or maybe, you know, not aware of what they are looking for, it can become really dangerous really quickly. And it is a gateway, because these people know that, you know, if you're willing to even go on a date with me, or even, you know, send a picture of your feet, right? Like, we've all heard of feet pics. We know that it's a thing. Lots of people like to make jokes about it. But it's just really important to know that these things are a gateway, and they're just looking to see, okay, if they bite on this, maybe they're willing to do a little bit more. And then they will consistently push the line to see how far they can get you to go.
Yeah, and I noticed, Avery, that you mentioned that there is people that you personally know that have gotten these messages. And, you know, like, it's great that you are able to like kind of laugh and push it off. But I like that you acknowledge like it really honestly just takes a weak moment or, you know, someone who that may not be educated on the matter just to be like, hey, you know, this is kind of too good of an offer to pass up and it doesn't take long and you're roped into something you don't want to be part of.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's so prevalent. You just don't know who to like what to trust and what to not trust anymore, because like a lot of these messages are like associated to like bot accounts. You know, we don't know if they're it's an actual human being or like, you know, some scheme going on. And yeah, it's just issues with modern society.
Well, I kind of want to throw a random question out there because I'm curious now, and this is kind of how we end up doing things sometimes, is just because the conversation is naturally going in one direction. Have you noticed that sometimes your social media tailors things particularly to your age group and maybe pushes some stuff on you a lot more often than it would, let's say, somebody else?
I definitely think so. I think that, I mean, this isn't, like, along the lines of sugar dating, but I think that, like, the push for things like OnlyFans to, like, really young people, like, college students and, like, people who, like, freshly turned 18 being, like, this is an amazing source of income, like, you get to do whatever you want, but I think that it's just, like, it like is like really like marketed towards like really impressionable people and like people who are like don't have a consistent stream of income. But I think that it's just so dangerous, and I think that like, I mean, I don't know, it's just like I feel like everyone I know has probably seen on their TikTok feed of like girls talking about how much money they made off OnlyFans or like, oh, I'm like blowing up on there and stuff. And so I think that with like social media, I think it's definitely like a huge push and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's definitely like everywhere and very common for people in our like age group, because one thing that I've noticed in the past few years, so people in my age group, we like to follow meme pages on Instagram, so like our feed's like full of memes and like, you know, funny videos and stuff like that. But of course the past few years, I feel like all of these meme pages have been advertising a lot of OnlyFans pages and also like, you know, promoting for OnlyFans. And it's definitely because they know the demographic of like people who like follow me pages and like engage with them are like people between the ages of like, you know, 18 to like mid 20s or, you know, so that's definitely something that I've noticed.
Do you feel a little bit like sometimes with how social media is directed that it almost exploits you a little bit, that it's like it preys upon a potential weakness or a vulnerability that your age demographic might already have?
Yeah, I think I definitely
think so. I think that like, I mean, like obviously like everyone kind of like struggles when they're like younger and like in their 20s, like I don't think it's like a super generation specific thing, but I think that like when you're like a new adult and like you're like trying to figure out like your job and everything, like I think before it's like people wouldn't be getting like OnlyFans like ads and stuff. Like that's not something that would happen before, but it's like so much more visible now and it's so much more easy to get like sucked into like doing like sex work and everything because like you can just like make an account and stuff like that versus like before I feel like there'd be a lot more like obstacles to get in the way.
Well, I think they've done a really good job of eliminating potential risk, especially with some things like OnlyFans, right? Because they portray it as you can get away with doing these things in the privacy of your own home. And therefore it eliminates the risk of potential abuse or, you know, even harsher things. And so it does, you know, it's kind of sad that they're really doing their best to make it as easy as possible for young women and for young men to pursue these alternate sources of income instead of doing what you guys are doing and going to school getting an education and really just, you know, doing their best to become like major contributors to society, to their communities. And you guys are doing that. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's really great.
Yeah, I think that like one of the like dangers of like the like accessibility of like all that stuff now is like it makes it like seem so easy to get sucked into it that you think that it would be easy to like leave it. But I mean, especially with social media, like things like stay. And like, let's say you make an OnlyFans account, but in like 10 years or not even 10 years, 5 years, you're like, this isn't like something I want to do. Like that doesn't just like go away. And so I think that it's like really easy to like get into it. And then it's also like really hard to get out of it.
I'm really impressed actually that you bring up that point, because I think it's one of the pitfalls sometimes that they hope that young people don't think about is, you know, far enough in the future, like what happens someday when I don't want to do OnlyFans anymore. And, you know, I'm done paying my way through school with my OnlyFans account. Now I want to become a respectable lawyer. And I have an OnlyFans account with all this graphic material on there. Like you're right. It doesn't just go away. So yeah. I love that you bring that up, because I think it's really important for us to be having conversations about.
Yeah, your digital footprint always stays. It's like there permanently. And, mm-hmm. you know, just because you have something up on the main servers, even if you take it down, you never know if someone else has a copy of it, for example. And that's the most scary part, because you just never know. You don't know. It's out there. You don't know who has it, too.
Yeah. And the other thing is, too, like, you know, a lot of people use that for blackmail. Like, that's something that we've seen a lot, too. Even just a simple selfie of your face on the internet, you know, they can take that and superimpose it onto something that's a little bit more graphic. And maybe, you know, it looks like you, even though it's not. And so it is just really important to be careful of what we're putting out there online. You know, who are we allowing to follow us in our circles and on social media and on Snapchat, like see our locations, like all of these things are tools that predators will use to try and get a foothold into somebody's life.
Yeah, I think that it just like, yeah, it just kind of stays with you and stuff. And I think that it could like definitely be used against you. So I think that like some people could like make the argument that like, I mean, like they're adults, like they can make the decision for themselves and everything. So I guess like as people who have probably more expertise than like me and Sean do, like where would you say like the line could be drawn between like, oh, this is someone who like wants to get into sex work versus like someone who's like a potential victim for human trafficking?
Well, interestingly enough, I'm going to take the lead on this one because I just had a conversation about this the other day. But I think often, you know, those questions are really great questions. But if you break it down to its simplest forms and you take somebody who, let's say, is willingly participating in sex work, like, you know, even take OnlyFans or whatever it might be, I would say 99% of the time, if not every time, they are pursuing it because it is an alternate source of income where they can make large amounts of money potentially very quickly. But if you sit down with somebody and you ask them what they're passionate about, like what they really want to do with their life, 9 times out of 10, if not more, it's not going to, like, what kid do you talk to? Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I want to be a sex worker. Like, never. Mm-hmm. You'll never hear it, because kids inherently know, like, what they're passionate about, what they want to be when they grow up. And, you know, that might change as they get older. But usually most people want to do something with their life that's either going to make a difference in the world or make a difference for other people. And no matter how you spin it, if you ask somebody, you know, what's your passion? And if you could pursue that passion with the same amount of income that you would make for something like, let's say, sex work, they're probably going to choose what they're passionate about. It's usually the money that's the draw for someone who is willfully choosing sex work, which, you know, like you said, they're an adult, they can choose for themselves. But I think the danger in that is that a lot of the time it takes away from what's really going on. And I like to tell people, you know, when I was being trafficked, I had been convinced at one point that this was something that I should have wanted to choose for myself because it was very empowering for women. And, you know, all the other stuff that you probably hear regularly going on surrounding the conversations of willful sex work. And yet inside, I felt like I was dying. I hated my life. I hated what I was doing. Obviously, I was being coerced and manipulated on top of that. But, you know, if you would ask me at the time, I would say, yeah, of course I'm willfully participating. But deep down, I knew like I really wasn't. So I think it's really challenging to make a definite statement because I think a lot of people who would say that they're willfully choosing sex work actually aren't. They've just been manipulated to the point where they're in full survival mode and they've accepted the fact that, you know, this is what I have to do right now at this point in my life in order to survive. So it's a challenging conversation to have because I think it's an individualistic thing. But the more that we talk to survivors and the more that we, you know, explore the cases that have come to the foundation, I think it becomes more and more apparent that there are a lot of people, like I said, that would claim that they're willfully choosing sex work, that when they get out, they realize like this was not what they wanted to do with their life. And there's a lot of regret. And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar, I'm kind of going off a little bit here, but there has been multiple different cases just recently in the States of former fairly well-known porn stars that have been committing suicide. I think it was three separate women just in the last 2 months that have taken their own life because once they get to a point where they feel like they aren't desirable or they're not getting the work that they need anymore, they feel like they don't have anything left to contribute and therefore they end up taking their life because it's not, I don't care who you talk to, I have a hard time believing that it's really fulfilling work. But that's just my opinion, right?
Yeah. No, I'd have to agree. I feel like I'd say like the vast majority of people who are like, like, even the people who, like, make jokes, like, oh, like, I'm going to drop out of school and become a stripper. Like, they're not doing that because they want to become a stripper. They're doing it because, like, they think it's easy money and they think that, like, you know, like, school's hard, but, like, being a stripper would be easy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of what you said, well, personally to me, was really eye-opening, and I never really saw it from that perspective before. I'm really sorry that you had to go through.
It's okay. You can go back if you want and listen to some previous podcast episodes where I actually tell my story. But yeah, it's something that I've become very open about because I guess just like you, I've experienced something that, you know, really had quite the impact on my life for the longest time. And even though I've been able to move past it and now be in a position where I can provide hope for other people who are struggling in the same ways that I did, I really am passionate about helping people avoid potentially making some of the mistakes that I made, which I mean, in a lot of ways, we tell people like when you've been trafficked, it's not your fault because you've been coerced and you've been manipulated. And so there is no shame or blame that ever rests on the victim. But in my healing process, you know, there was definitely a few mistakes that I made. But if we can prevent people from even being trafficked to begin with by giving them the proper tools and the education, you know, it's very rewarding to know that you could have potentially helped someone avoid the same pain that you've experienced. So I'm very open about my experiences being trafficked because I know it does help a lot of people when we're able to be vulnerable and open up.
Yeah, I think like even like seeing like seeing somebody talk about their experience is like really eye-opening, because it's like, oh, this is like something that really happens, and it's like you see like how they got caught into like the cycle of human trafficking. So it's like, I think like seeing personal experiences is like so important to like not even like offering like support to survivors, but just like creating awareness about the situation and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's challenging with what you guys were saying too, when it comes to like quick money, right? That's a big reason why people get into it, is they think it'll be a way to make money really quickly. And, you know, we have to be really careful when we're observing social media, because social media really portrays a very easy way of making money and living a very good life. And
they portray it as a very glamorous lifestyle.
They do. Like, you see the videos online about how glamorous it is to do all these things, right? Like, these are videos that people are posting and talking about. And so when you are young and impressionable, and these are the videos that are coming up on your feed, you think, well, why wouldn't I do that? This looks great. Like, this looks like such an easy lifestyle, but it's never like that. And we just have to be so careful of what we are, you know, taking in online, because there's a lot of lies and misconceptions that people like to put out there, but they dress it up and they make it look really easy.
Yeah. I was about to say, it range is definitely the most easy to be influenced, because of our lack of experience in life, and we're just very, very easy in general to be coerced. So that's definitely something that people use to target us.
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know if this is, like, completely, like, on topic, but I think that, like even, like, growing up, like, we're told, like, messages, like, oh, like, your 20s are your prime, like, you'll never look better and stuff like that. So I think that, like, I mean, like, desperate people are, like,
oh, YOLO!
They're, like, there's this opportunity to take advantage of, like, my looks and my sexuality that, really, I don't think in 10 years that it'll, like, they think that it'll be, like, there anymore. So I think that, like, young people are especially, like, the target audience for that and stuff.
Well, I know you might know this, Avery, because you're in psychology, and so maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe the decision-making part of your brain actually isn't fully developed until you're 25 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, there's
risky decisions
that
are there, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all make questionable decisions in our early 20s. I know I made a lot of them, just even aside from, like, other things that I've been through. But, you know, it's part of growing up in a sense. And so, you know, I have so much respect for today's youth and today's young people and university students, because you guys are met with challenges that I didn't have when I was your age, and I was still trafficked. And I think in some ways, you know, I really hope that, you know, for the incredible work that you guys are doing right now and putting so much effort into this, this run and this walk and, you know, the fundraiser, you know, I really hope that there is, you know, not just a deep internal sense of, you know, what I'm doing right now matters, but also that somehow it's going to come full circle where you guys are, for lack of a better word, I guess, blessed through this work and this passion you have. Because it is, you know, it is really rewarding work. And it's really just, like I said, it's great to see young people just really, you know, catch the cause and run with it.
Yeah. What was it that made you guys decide to do a 5K? I may just be kind of going off topic, but what was it, that event that you were talking about earlier, Sean, with the 24-hour run?
Yeah, so in the 24-hour race, how it works is you're basically running a track for 24 hours, and you have a bracelet that each member has a bracelet that tracks how far they've ran in 24 hours. And then what people do is they camp overnight on the grounds. But in like over here in Vancouver, especially with such a new concept of raising awareness for such an issue, doing a camping overnight on campus out in the probably like not too cold, but like
15, cold enough.
Cold enough. It's Vancouver too, so it's like always gloomy and like raining. I don't think many people would be happy about or as much have as much optimism on camping over like overnight and running the same track again and again and again. It's different back home because it's always sunny. It's tropical weather. It is really hot, but it's also been done for quite a long time that it's just become like tradition. So when I first proposed the idea of doing Stop the Traffic, I initially wanted to make it 10 kilometers and basically run around.
I love the optimism.
Yeah. And I mean, some people said I was too ambitious, but I feel like my vision for the long term, like the future of the event, is that it's a 10 kilometer run, passes through the symbolic landmarks of UBC. It's meant to be, it's meant to show like, we are like one, like we are a student body and we are like together on this issue. And basically for those few hours that the roads were shut down, are shut down in UBC and we stopped the traffic, it's to basically symbolize that time on campus has stopped, like together, just for the, in the name of the victims and survivors of human trafficking.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's very special. How was the response when you maybe brought this idea to your peers? Like, was everybody really excited and on board, or was there maybe a little bit of hesitation? Because I know that does happen a lot. It's still a topic of conversation that people sometimes have a hard time approaching. For various reasons, they don't think it happens here. They don't think it's going to affect their community. So was it a fairly easy response to get everyone on board, or were there maybe some challenges that you've faced along the way?
Well, I had mixed responses to the idea. People loved the cause, 100%. Everyone loved the cause. It is also not a really common cause to do a philanthropy event for, generally here on campus or in Vancouver. At my time here, like I've been in Vancouver for nearly 4 years now, 3.5, I think, at the moment. And I have yet to see an event that, it's for the cause of human trafficking or raises awareness and educates people on such a global issue. So when I brought this forward, everyone, I guess they like had their eyes opened wider and they're like, okay, like, cause it's always an issue that sits at the back of people's minds. And when you bring it up, it's like, wow. And you know, a lot of the hesitation that came with it was definitely the ambition and how realistic it is to be able to shut down roads on campus, booking out entire space, uniting many organizations together. It was definitely a process. I first proposed the idea in the summer of 2022, and then I started talking to people about it. By September of 2023, this was when we started to get the ball rolling. A couple like student body organizations on campus decided that this is a cause that they want to stand behind for, that and to stand for, and we approached the university. The university loved the idea, and we booked out the whole of the student common space outside of the AMS Nest and the path that leads up to Main Mall. I'm not sure if you guys have been to UBC, but it's a massive like square and a whole like pedestrian path that leads to the main pedestrian walkway called Main Mall. And the entire main mall is booked out for the day too. And in terms of traffic, we didn't want to go overboard and, you know, be too ambitious on stopping too many traffic on our first event, inaugural event. So we just thought it would be good enough for the first time to stop the traffic on the roundabout area by the Rose Garden, where there's a Canadian flagpole. And we thought it would also be really symbolic that this is the area that we decided to stop the traffic for the first time, so that runners would be running around the Canadian flag and it's, you know, in the inaugural like event.
I love it. Love it.
Like pushback and everything. Like, I remember like we got this like one comment on an Instagram post being like, how is running a 5K gonna stop human trafficking? And I was like, you know what, that's a fair point. I think that like us like UBC students running around campus isn't gonna like end human trafficking across the globe, but I think that this initiative is great because like fundraising aside, like I think that even like doing stuff like going on this podcast and like making information like accessible to students and like raising awareness in that way, I think is just like gonna make a world's difference, even if like we might not see it. Like, even if like someone looking at our Instagram post goes, oh no, I know more about what human trafficking can look like, or like stuff like that, it could be preventative, or like maybe people realize like, oh, actually someone I know seems to like be showing patterns of like concerning behavior and everything, and like, let me go talk to like an expert about this or something. Just like awareness is like equally as important as anything else.
The main goal of the event is definitely to educate and put forward the issue. Because like, again, I can't stress this enough. It's always an issue that's at the back of people's minds, and people need to know that this is a very serious issue that impacts many people globally and even literally in our backyard. Like, you haven't, like, nobody has any idea. It could be, like, down the street somewhere, someone's about to become a victim. Like, it's a really serious issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you're aware, but the campaign that we ran last year, one of the main slogans was that within 1 kilometer of you right now, someone is being lured into human trafficking. And it really is that prevalent of an issue, even right here in Canada. And so, you know, I know I probably sound like a bit of a broken record, but I do not want either of you or your team to ever question the impact that I'm sure you are all going to have with this event and even going forward, because like you said, you know, it's a thing that's in the back of people's minds, and we're fighting to get people to move it from back here to up here. And every little bit counts and every little bit matters. And I know there's a danger to, you know, is the little bit that I'm offering going to make a difference? And I can honestly tell you it really does. So,
yeah, because like the biggest part is the awareness piece, right? Like, you know, maybe there's just a random passerby that day who is witnessing the event, and then it allows them to go and maybe look up what the event is, and then they get, you know, brought into the signs and maybe what it looks like here in Canada. And you will never know the impact that an event like what you guys are doing is going to have on people. I mean, you're going to hear some stories, but you will never hear them all. And just to know that something as simple, I mean, I know it's not simple because there's a lot of work that goes into like doing a run like this, but just having an event such as this plays such a big impact. You know, that's one of the questions we get all the time is, what can I do to help? How can I raise awareness? How can I get involved? And that's a big reason why we wanted to highlight what you folks are doing, is because something like this is a perfect example of how people can get involved in their community. They can bring people together. It raises awareness, and you just never know who is going to stumble across it and will ultimately be protected. Or maybe down the line, they remember something that they saw that you guys had on your social media when they're in a real life experience. And it sets off that alarm bell to be like, wait a minute, maybe there's something more happening here. And so the event that you guys are doing is amazing, and it is going to help a lot more people than I think you realize. So I'm sure that comment that you guys got may have been a little bit discouraging, but like you guys
said, there's always going to be haters, guys. Yeah.
It's not necessarily about the, you know, it, yeah, sure, okay, it's not going to stop everything, but you guys are doing such an amazing job of raising awareness, especially in your community. And on campus, because I mean, you guys have lots of students there. What was the number? I think you guys told us the other day.
It's like 60,000 students. Like UBC is massive, so I think that
it's incredible.
This is a good school to like be having events like this because there's just such a big outreach.
Yeah, and it's not just UBC students too. A big portion of our runners were signed up from like various running clubs in Vancouver that are university students. They were actually one of the first people to like, you know, step up and be like, this is like a really good cause and we want to be a part of it. Wow. So it was really eye-opening when we saw all of these like third-party organizations from off-campus that has nothing to do with UBC, like step up and, you know, being like, this is it. Like, we want to do this with you guys. So that was really good to see.
Absolutely. I also think it's so great that your university got on board as well with it. And that's a challenge that we have seen, is sometimes there's a lot of red tape when it comes to events like this. And it's so great that you guys have the support of your admin and your university behind you. And, you know, hopefully that can be an encouragement too for maybe anyone who's listening that, you know, gets approached to maybe do something. Like, do everything you can to help these events happen, because they do such a good job at raising awareness.
Yeah, I think that like UBC's like done a great job of like being supportive of the event, and I mean like shutting down a road is pretty hard. Like there's a lot of like stuff that you have to. Yeah, it's a really like difficult thing because like, you know, people have their like daily routines, and like disrupting that a little bit can like scare people away, because like I
rub people the wrong way.
Yeah, I think that like I know when I am driving around, I'm like, oh, this road is closed, I really want to go there, like now I'm pissed off. But I think that UBC has done a great job of like supporting the initiative, even if it's like disrupts the like routine a little bit.
Yeah, because I believe shutting down roads, you have to apply, and then you have to coordinate with the traffic control like personnel on like what time specifically you want the barricades up, and you also have to draw like an alternate traffic plan and like you know, like have a plan to like where to divert traffic in case cars do come by and try to get through. Like me and my team, like we've personally never shut down a road before in our lives. So you know, UBC was really helpful when it comes to guiding us through the process. The road closure has still yet to be finalized, but we're getting there.
So do you guys want to share just a little bit, maybe more details about the event, like when it's happening, what it kind of entails, how to get involved? Because we're hoping that we'll have like some listeners from the university, if they haven't heard about it yet, which I'm assuming you guys are advertising, so probably everybody knows. Yeah. But, you know, even other people in the Vancouver area, you know, give us some details.
Yes. Oh, sorry, Sean.
Okay, well, okay, I can give like a really quick pitch spiel. Mm-hmm. It's happening on the 7th of April, which is a Sunday, and it's the last Sunday before the last day of classes for the academic year before we go into like final season. The main area, the common area, which is called University Commons, it's outside of the AMS Nest, which is our student union building. That's where the starting line and finish line is going to be. The event starts at 10 a.m., but our registration, we're planning to start it at 9:30. And we're going to have a stage, you know, we plan to have speakers, you know, we're gonna have vendors around, and you know, our like lovely sponsors having a booth helping us with the cause, and yeah, if there's anything like that.
I mean, I don't want it to sound like this is gonna be like some big like race, like, oh, there's gonna be medals and stuff. Like, I mean, I'm probably not gonna have the privilege of being able to go and run this race. I'm probably gonna have to like run around and do stuff, but I mean, if I were to do this race, I'd be walking it. Like, I'm not a runner, but I think it's like a, I don't know, 3-hour commitment that goes to like a really great cause. And I mean, you could take it at the pace that you want to, and like, it's inclusive. Like, so just like whatever you're comfortable with is like what you're willing to do and everything. So yeah, I think that, I mean, if you're in like the Vancouver area and you have nothing going on a Sunday morning, like, go ahead and like walk around the UBC campus. Like, it's gonna be super fun. It's like beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like half the walk is you're gonna be facing like the ocean with mountains. So it's like really doesn't get better than
yeah.
Than
well, the point is it's not a race. So yeah. anyone is free to come. There is no pressure on, you know, how fast you complete the 5K. You can walk it. You can run it. You can jog it. You can do whatever. It's the presence that counts. It's starting the race that counts, and it's finishing the race that counts.
So if somebody wants to sign up, where should they do so?
So they can check out our website. It's stopthetraffic.ca, and there's no K on the traffic. It's like stopthetraffic.ca. we have like a website going that's up, and you can learn a little bit about our cause and the organizations that are involved in putting on this event. And then there's a register tab that takes you to an external site called Bounce Life. And it's helpful if you create an account just so like all your information is saved, but you just like, the event page will pop up and you buy a runner's registration tier. And that's really it. There's not a lot of like obstacles or anything. And so, yeah.
I mean, some of the things that would be really important just to look out for, we did release last year a broad awareness campaign called See the Trafficking Signs. And in that campaign, there are 9 most common signs that we typically see with our cases that we get in our offices. And so they can look different for everybody, but one of the biggest signs that we have seen, and these are things that you can kind of see more so in your loved ones or people that are in your circle. This isn't necessarily to be watching out for in strangers, but some of the biggest things we see are new group of friends or maybe change in activity interests. Two cell phones is a really big one. If someone has 2 cell phones,
they could be a drug dealer, but they could be trafficked.
Yeah, it's a way that traffickers keep track of their victims. So that's a big one. Just change in grades as well. That can be a really telltale sign. And also just new things, new items, clothing, jewelry, that sort of thing.
Stuff that they wouldn't be able to typically afford. You know, that's why sugar dating was something that we kind of went over, is because it can be a really big red flag. Just seeing somebody potentially living quite a different lifestyle and having a lot of different stuff that they wouldn't normally be able to afford or pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that, like, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I think that, like, I mean, like, university, like, if a person at a university, like, couldn't afford groceries, like, one day, but then, like, the next day they have, like, oh, like, look at my new phone or something like that. Like, I think that's, like, a pretty big red flag.
Well, and it's probably important for us to mention, like, what we have seen working with survivors and, you know, observing some of the things that we've been able to observe over the years is that typically someone is trafficked by somebody that they know. So that could be potentially somebody that they've recently met online, but, even though, you know, that whole snatch and grab often does happen in overseas situation, you know, the stranger danger, don't get in the car. And it, we do see it the odd time here. Very commonly, it is a potential love interest, you know, that Romeo relationship. That's how it happened to me. Or it could be a family member, or, you know, it's just, it's usually someone that has established a relationship of trust with a potential victim. And so that's why it's the best that these signs that we've talked about are being applied to people that you probably already have somewhat of a relationship with or a knowledge of, just because they can be very easily misconstrued in a stranger.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that it's like not even just like looking at one sign, but like looking at like behavior changes is like a whole, like a pattern over time and everything.
Well, I mean, you're taking psychology. Yeah. You should be the best person to be able to pick these things out.
Hopefully. I don't know if I'm that qualified yet, but I'm getting there, hopefully. But yeah, I think that like even if like you're not an expert in analyzing people's behavior, like if something, like if it's like someone that you know and like someone that you love and you notice that like they've changed a lot, like I think that it's like worthwhile to like look into it and stuff. And I mean, like, we've been advised like by like some of the experts that we've talked to, but like when you like notice patterns, like don't go and confront them about it, because I've apparently that can like put a bunch of people in danger, and like you should like maybe like turn to like, I don't know, good resources and stuff. So I feel like the Joy Smith could be a good resource and everything.
Mm-hmm. Never be afraid to ask for help or ask questions. I think that's really important. Like one of the questions you had asked was, what should somebody do if they think maybe either they're in that situation or someone that they love is in that situation? And, you know, it can be challenging because you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's better to be wrong and have spoken up and said something than to have been quiet and, you know, they were secretly maybe looking for help. And so I think it's just really important to have these conversations, not be afraid to ask for help or reach out. And that's what we're here for too. We have a lot of people who will reach out to us and just kind of give us the rundown of, this is what I've been noticing with either my child or a student or a friend, and you know, what do you guys think? And you know, we can kind of work through it. And if someone is in immediate danger, absolutely call the police. I think that is so important to recognize as well. Just if you know that someone is in immediate danger, don't wait around. Definitely call the authorities.
Yeah, and we do. We have lots of online resources as well. So, you know, the moment you hear this podcast or, you know, you come across the Stop the Traffic, we have plenty of online resources as well on our website. You can go to the Joy Smith Foundation. There's multiple different links. You can actually links and access some of our resources through our podcast platform. We have our own webpage. There's multiple resources available there that will bring you right to the Joy Smith Foundation as well.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, it's even like stuff like Joy Smith, I know, has like an education center and everything where like you can like take a class and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was going to propose to like the Stop the Traffic team, like we all like did it together and everything. But I think that's just such a easy and accessible way to like learn, just so it, cause like, I mean, who doesn't have like a Sunday where they're just not doing anything and stuff. And I think that being able to like, and like get access to these resources is so great.
Yeah. Well, like I said, broken record here, just spinning round and around. But yeah. we really appreciate you two for coming on today and being willing to come and talk to us and our listeners, and you know, be able to provide this resource for so many different people, but also the passion that is driving you to stand up and have your voices be heard and really make a difference. It's just really, it's really encouraging for us to see. I mean, we have those conversations too sometimes where it's like, oh man, the fight's getting a little rough, like better better buckle up and armor up and whatever else. But we're really thrilled at this initiative that you guys are taking.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being here. We are so excited to see how your event turns out. I know we're going to try and be there in person because I think that would be a lot of fun. But
that'd be so much fun.
Yeah. Best of luck to you guys and your event. I'm sure it is going to be amazing.
Thanks so much for having us. I think that this was such a fun experience and everything.
Yeah. Never thought I would do a podcast ever.
Me too.
Well, congratulations. You've done the first one. There may be many more from here. You never know.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you haven't already, please make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on our social channels, at Luma and Bloom Official, and leave us a review where you can.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. We hope you had your own Luma moment.